Welcome to the Town to Learning Show podcast series, episode 118 with independent learning tech analyst John Lay. Today, I interview Tammy Rutherford, CEO of Rustici Software, about why learning content has become a supply chain problem and what organizations must do to manage it at scale. You can find more of our fiercely independent content at talentedlearning.com. Well, welcome back, listeners, to another episode of the Town to Learning Show podcast series. On this show, I am very fortunate to interview the world's leading experts in learning technology from both the vendor and the practitioner perspective. Today is no different. With Tammy here, we have an expert that really sits on both sides of the fence, the first part of her career as a doer, and now as the enabler, or her organization as the enabler for learning systems across the world. It's not often that I meet anybody that speaks to more learning system providers in a given year than myself. Tammy is certainly one of them, and that's why we love to get together and share notes. When you build a great learning program, then another business unit wants it, and then another country, and then a partner needs it, and then maybe one of your customers, and a customer wants it inside their LMS. We require a company with its own learning platform, and before long, what started as a single course now has become dozens of versions and dozens of languages across sometimes dozens of systems. Most learning teams haven't planned for this. It just happens. It happens quickly in the daily efforts of running learning, and it's all easy to get surprised, But somewhere along the way, someone has to become responsible for managing all the synchronized content, updating courses, managing versions, supporting different technical standards, tracking licenses, expiration dates, making sure every learner gets the right content in the right place. What started as instructional design has quietly become a logistics solution, a supply chain problem, a learning operations problem, the business of learning. Add AI to the equation, and organizations can create more learning content than ever before. And that means even more versions, more updates, more translations, more pricing levels, more areas, more audiences. And this challenge just continues to escalate. I worked with hundreds of organizations on learning system strategy. I've seen this challenge everywhere from all levels, but it's worse now in the modern era than it's ever before, because so much content can be created so quickly. And that content is what you serve up to your audiences. It has to be right. You can't serve up wrong content. You can't serve up outdated content. And so a lot of organizations are looking at the same problem and trying to solve it from different ways. Rustici has quietly been providing the plumbing underneath to solve this content distribution, this federated content problem across your extended enterprise of employees, customers, partners, or if you're a content distribution business, how do you get it out across the world in different languages and different standards and keep your sanity? It's not easy to do, but we're going to find out some best practices from one of the world's most experienced content experts. Tammy, welcome to the Down to Learning Show podcast series. It's sure great to have you here.
John, thanks for having me. I'm excited. We've talked a few times. I've seen your name for years, so I'm really excited to have this conversation today.
Me too, because right away we found we're kindred spirits here in terms of our love of content and content distribution, which isn't something a lot of people say, between professionals, but between us, it's the truth. And getting to your point of knowing my name for a while, I've known Rustici for a while, but Rustici touches probably more learners in a given year than anybody else, any other organization in the world. But a lot of people don't know your name. Isn't that crazy? So how about you tell us a little bit about Rustici, who you guys are, where you fit into the market, and we'll dig in from there.
Perfect. Yep. I will give you the 1 minute overview. First of all, you said it correctly, so I always appreciate that. For those who've struggled over the years, Rustici Software, named after our founder, Mike Rustici, who started this business back in 2002. And we focus specifically on making content and platforms work together, leveraging these technical standards you've heard of probably over the years, like SCORM, XAPI, LTI, all of the acronyms. And essentially, the technical standards make things work together. So content and platforms can't speak to each other without having that common language underneath, which is SCORM or XAPI usually. So when we started this business, we solved this problem for LMS providers that needed to be able to play SCORM content, and content publishers and providers and authoring tools that needed to publish their content as SCORM for that compatibility. Fast forward to today in 2026, and we've expanded our footprint and our use cases a little bit more broadly. But as you mentioned, how in the heck are we under the hood of all of these transactions, or where does Rustici fit? Our customers implement our software into their products to make them work better together. And so when you take a course, there's a good chance that the course that you're taking was created using an authoring tool like Articulate or Captivate that uses our software, and launched and played and tracked in an LMS that I won't say all of the names because there's many out there, but they're using our software under the hood as well. So we really act as like the plumbing across the industry, and you rarely see us, if at all. And usually if you see us, something's broken, but we try to prevent that from happening.
You're the 3M of learning systems. You don't make a learning system, you just make it better.
Exactly.
For all of these. Well, after 25 years, after a certain period of time, 15 years or so, it wasn't just standards and embedding standards. You really discovered there's really another problem, just as big, maybe bigger in the industry, with content distribution. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Who experiences that problem? Tell us what that means, content distribution in general. Like, don't we distribute content through our LMS to begin with? You know, what's different about this term?
Yeah. So I won't go into too many of the technical details, but you have to know a little bit to understand why it's a challenge for a lot of people. SCORM was designed way back when organizations had one LMS and they had courses that they would deliver in one LMS because all of their employees and anybody they cared to train lived in that LMS. And so SCORM is designed very well for that use case. But we've discovered over time that the same piece of content, the same course, likely needs to go out to multiple LMSs. If you are a content publisher, you understand what I'm talking about, because most of your customers have their own system or own platform they want your content to play well in. And so now we bump into a place where we have you'll hear the term federated or distributed content. I need to broadcast this course to multiple systems. And the SCORM standard was not designed well for that use case. So again, not getting into too many of the technical details, but content and the platform need to play on the same server is how SCORM was designed. But that gets really hard to do. So what we saw over time and where this distribution problem really showed up originally was publishers coming to us and saying, hey, I've got a course, but now I have to share my files out with all of my customers, which presents a few different challenges. We start to look at, okay, I have multiple copies of my course. So challenge one is multiple copies of the same thing out in the world. So maintaining those and updating those courses gets unwieldy. We also have other challenges when it comes to tracking and visibility. How many people have taken that course? Who's completing it? That becomes a challenge when you start to think about courses living in multiple systems. So when we think about these things, we started looking at what are some ways we can help make this better? Can we provide a way to manage content in one location and share access with these systems, but remove the friction that comes with handing off full course files that have to be managed across multiple systems? So, we've seen this problem evolve over time. And with everything we've seen, scaling becomes the biggest issue. So it might not have been a big challenge back in the day. If you had a couple of customers, you just dealt with it. But as you start to grow your business or your catalog grows, it becomes an exponential challenge if you don't stay ahead of it.
Interesting. So it's really two broader use cases. The one use case is that now knowledge is becoming more ubiquitous across all your audiences of your corporation, internal or external.
Yeah.
And so instead of having a bunch of different LMSs, or even if you do, to be able to share that content. And then the other use case is if content is your business, then, how do you get it out to all their LMSs and distribute the content like that? Are they the two main ones? Or I guess there's still a third one, which is your organizational customers and getting it out to there and your partners, which is, I guess, still, which would be an extension of the first. So that's like three big major use cases that probably encounter this every time. Is that right? Is there more?
You've summarized it really well, and I think when we look at organizations, this is the new kid on the block for us in some ways that's starting to feel the pain of having more systems than they realized when they start to look at internally. We may have multiple LMSs that we've intentionally acquired or we've accidentally acquired or kept around longer than we intended to. Think about, lots of mergers and acquisitions happening and legacy platforms entering into an ecosystem and slow to retire, if ever. So sometimes we see organizations that accumulate LMSs over time by accident. We also see, and we've started seeing this more, a lot of organizations that are focusing on improving their partner enablement programs, customer education. So now they're training not just their employees, but these external audiences. I think you and I have both used the term extended enterprise for a long period of time, and some people may not know what that means, but when you're training people other than your employees, but they're an extension of your company, basically, whether it's a customer, a partner, a representative. So now you start to see this learner audience that grows beyond what you're, what's maybe served by your core LMS. So those organizations certainly are starting to see more systems coming into their world through their partners or even with an acquisition. And then we also have the challenge of, LMS migration over time. And what do we think about how does content play in that? We might unpack that a little bit later.
Well, if I'm either doing customer education or learning is my business, and I spend all this time creating my own university, why don't I just make people come to me?
Fair question. A lot of people do. That's not uncommon. We do see training organizations or training companies that have said, "Hey, my content performs best in this application in this way. Come to me." And that might have worked for a period of time. I think we're starting to see addition, learners less likely to go outside of their systems, whether it's just additional friction. So imagine, I'm already in the systems that I use every day. I'm already logged into all of those things. Oh, now I need to stop what I'm doing, launch this application, remember a password, all of the headaches that we all feel these pains, right? So we start to see places where, hey, I don't want to go to another system, or my organization won't let me. There's certainly additional security things that show up today where not every website's accessible anymore. Some sort of organizations might lock things down differently. But most importantly, it's all about learner experience. So I think what people are really focusing on and is you want to make sure the learners, your end user, has the best experience. And if you can come to them versus making them come to you, that's just one less point of friction and one better chance at getting that learner to launch that course, to take that course, to engage with your content. So we really think about it as learner experience more than anything else.
So it's really just learning in the flow of work is basically the main driver behind it. If you break that flow, you break your concentration. You got to retrieve passwords. You've got to remember where to go. And what if you have to go to 38 places because of. And then the mother organization, what do they get? If they're sending all their learners away, they don't get to capture that knowledge, so they don't ever get to be strategic because they don't know what the results are. They're just paying for content and hoping it sorts out down the road, maybe.
That's a great point, because that is absolutely, we talk about visibility and tracking, and it's a two sides of the equation. And organizations that have people that leave their ecosystem to go take this training may not have the visibility into how much time did those people actually spend taking those courses. And that's a really important metric for a lot of organizations alongside what actually happened in those sessions. So yes, so having that tracking and visibility is critical to both the training provider and the organization.
And so now we start organizations. So, you know, my theory is in a few years, organizations won't just look at learning content, but it's really it's knowledge throughout their entire extended enterprise on, no matter who's taking it, it's the same content and, you know, the same knowledge to some degree. And so what that's, you know, making organizations do is make more content, I think. And to pile on with AI, it gets even easier to make more content. Not necessarily great content, you know, we don't know, but just more and more and more content. And so I think organizations are now tripping into this hidden admin tax. What's that? That's your idea. What's that mean? And how's that manifested itself here in the modern content age?
Yeah. You touched on a couple of things there that are really, I'm excited to kind of jump into. And when we talk about the admin tax that comes with managing content at scale, there's a couple of things there. One of the things you highlighted was, yes, that when we say content and training content, courseware, whatever you want to call it, it's starting to come in lots of different shapes and sizes. You know, back in the day, it was a PowerPoint that you converted into an e-learning that maybe lasted 30 minutes to an hour. Those probably still exist, but now we've started seeing multimodal formats. We've seen, you know, video, micro-learning, all types of different shapes and sizes for the types of things we call training and content today. But it all goes back to, it's just knowledge management. This is information that you need to get out to your audiences, your employees, your customers, your partners, whomever that is, all of them. And you want to make sure that you're providing not only valuable content, but accurate content. So you touched on two things there that are worth unpacking. One is accuracy of the thing and the volume of the things that you've created. And then when you put those two things together, it starts to become an exponential challenge to keep up with. And I'll break that down a little bit to show you a little bit more of what I mean there. Your courses and the information you're putting out in the world, whether it's the same course you provide to your customer service representative, your customers for their own education purposes, and your partners to sell and represent that product is probably going to change. The specs are going to change. You're going to update your messaging. Every time you want to make changes to that and keep it fresh and accurate, the admin tax starts to show up here, where we now start to think about what has to happen to make sure that the updates I make get to the end user, get to that learner. And when we think about it and look across organizations, we've heard wild stories that it takes 58 steps to get a change managed to update a course in the LMS. I haven't done the forensics on that one. That seems a little bit high. However, we do hear these stories because I think the thing people don't fully appreciate sometimes is there are lots of steps. It's a pretty manual process in some places too. Making the change is easy. Getting the change to the end learner is the harder part that people sort of forget about. And that means, how easy is it to update courses in your LMS? Do you have to reassign the course if you make a change? What happens to your reporting? What happens to people that were already in the course? So there's a lot of things that come with managing content at scale. And that's one of the pieces we talk about on this admin tax side of things, is really fully appreciating the complexity that may come with updating courses. The other side of it you were touching on is, you know, what does AI do to all of, you know, where does AI fit into all of this? And, you know, I think there's wonderful opportunities that we've seen so far with when we look at AI as it relates to creating training content. Language translations is the place I'll go to first, where I think we're starting to see even more organizations being able to offer multiple languages in the course for their courses. So some of the barriers to entry there have been reduced. I think the cost to do translations has certainly come down a bit. The turnaround time, things like that, I think it's becoming more accessible. But it also means that you now have the scale problem that we just talked about, where you were managing one course before, maybe you offer it in 10 languages now. You now have 10 courses. So that's just one title. You haven't even talked about creating more types of content yet. We're just creating a different version of the existing course in multiple languages.
Wow, that's right. That's right. I always forget that point on how challenging it is. But with AI, it's super simple now. I see LMS vendors say, hey, you can have it in 38 versions here by, you know, in 2 seconds. And so everybody's translating their courses. But when they do that, then generally with learning systems, you have these 38 different objects of the same course, you know, how to do X, Y, Z in every conceivable language. And then reporting and understanding and launching that becomes a challenge. How are organizations dealing with that now? I mean, what's the content distribution strategy to overcome that? Because that seems monumental from an admin tech standpoint.
It can certainly be monumental. So really thinking through the problem to figure out, excellent, if we do this, what happens next? And this is the really walking through the process to understand how are you going to be managing updates to courses, assigning to learners, who decides which language to give the learner, all of those things come into play here. So I think every organization that we talk to is sort of in the, some people I think are discovering the challenge after the fact. So they've kind of gone down the road and now they find out, oh, there's a bunch of more steps than we realized we need to incorporate into our process. How much more time is this going to add on the back end of things? So really kind of thinking about the whole process from start to finish on, you know, I create this course, how do I get it to the end learner? If I've done that, you know, if I create 10 versions of this course, what does that mean? And that sort of walking through, kind of applying a supply chain mindset sometimes as far as how do you get your product to your customer and what are the means to doing that? And how do we streamline it? So are there ways that we can find to manage our content more centrally or solving some problems to think about change management? So if we have a course update, you know, if you centralize your content or take a centralized approach to things, the sort of hub and spoke model that you might think about from a distribution standpoint, that starts to solve some of the problems we've just talked about as it relates to one change versus a change across every single system. So finding ways to sort of streamline the overhead that comes with updating courses.
Yeah. Okay. This is why I like always talking to you, because we dig down into very nerdy.
we will get in the weeds with you a little bit. So if we get too weedy, you just tell me and we'll pull
right.
it back
no,
up.
We get down deep. So in this case, I think what you're talking about is a concept called equivalencies. But what if I have an LMS that can't do equivalency languages? So content distribution in the center then can solve the equivalency problem? Is that what you mean by getting that right version to the right learner and being able to report on that?
Exactly. A couple of things there. Yeah. So you mentioned equivalencies, which, you know, we've looked at this problem to say, can we help streamline the challenge that comes with a single course title that's offered in a variety of languages? Can we pull that back to one file versus managing it as 20 separate objects, as you mentioned? You know, do we have 20 different things that we're uploading and assigning in the LMS? And we looked at ways to solve this problem to say, hey, how can we take some of the steps out of that process? And equivalence is our solution to that, where in Content Controller, the course will, you can upload all of your titles, all of your language translations for that title, but you treat it as one course. So, you know, we've got one course file representing the 10 different languages that course is offered in. That acts as one object in an LMS for assignment. So it's taking all of those steps out of the equation. And then at the end of the day, the learner is the one that decides which language do I take this course in? So you're taking all of that overhead away from the administrator, away from, you know, everybody but the learner to decide in a simple drop down that also gives them choice, right? So now you've given your learner, the end learner, the choice of which language do you want to take this course in? So, and, wow. You know, so better learner experience probably. And you've also saved a ton of time from your LMS admin and probably whoever else is in that equation as far as those steps go. So there's a big win when we think about how to apply this distribution approach when it comes to language translation. The other thing you sort of unpacked there was versioning. So now we have also, like, what happens when you update a course? And being able to make the update once, No more upload, download, reassign, or anything else. Because you only have a master copy of that course, the next time it's launched, the right version is presented to the learner with nobody taking any extra steps to make that happen.
Wow. Wow. One of the things I run into all the time is organizations struggle with versioning. Do you make a, how do you guys, how does that handle now in the modern era? Do you just start a course, make somebody start over? You say you got to be out of here by a certain deadline or forever hold your peace? Like what's the best strategy now?
Good question. I think there's actually, I was just talking to one of our customers about this not long ago, and it was, if you have a more seamless way to keep your courses up to date or to improve them along the way without disrupting a learner, without asking an LMS admin to jump through 58 hoops just to fix a typo, put a better picture in there, update a tagline, you know, you can do that now and no one needs to know. I think back in, you know, if you don't have a streamlined version of this or streamlined option, I think people were making a lot of choices on, is this a big enough problem that I need to disrupt all of these people to make the change? So I think there was a quality issue. There's a quality issue here if I can improve the quality of my course without disrupting anybody. But what happens to people that are in flight with the course is what you were sort of asking, like, what do we do with them? Yeah. I think you decide. So there's places here where if I'm fixing a typo, if it's a cosmetic fix, what we'll call cosmetic, and someone's halfway through an hour-long compliance course, I'm probably not going to make them start all over again. That feels bad. But if this is a compliance course and they're halfway through it and the regulation has changed, I absolutely need to start you over because that has a different impact on things. So a lot of it will be business impact is probably your biggest decision there. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you also have the ability to, you need to have the ability to have reporting and visibility on which employees took which version of a course. This is, we have certainly heard from customers that that's critical. Their compliance folks come around a couple of times a year and they need really clean records for audit purposes. And that means high level fidelity of, okay, John completed this course, you know, on July 15th. Awesome. We have two versions of this course. Which one did he take? So that you can actually get down to that level of visibility and not just, mm-hmm. oh, he took the course. Well, if the course changed, what do you know? What don't you know? Or what information did you not receive?
Mm-hmm. Now, if that mandatory course of compliance is about information about your company's history, that's one thing. If it's about operating a crane where a whole bunch of people could die on a high rise or something like that, you need a different level of fidelity of knowing exactly what that versioning is. So the more high stakes, the more versioning becomes absolutely indispensable in your content thought. But I'm not one to let things just be easy. So I'm going to even make it harder, more difficult here. So my understanding is that SCORM is really ubiquitous. SCORM is SCORM, and you can just play it in any LMS around the world. So it probably shouldn't be a challenge for organizations to give their content to another LMS and just have it run perfectly. Is that a fair assumption?
I think this is a loaded question.
Loaded one.
SCORM is ubiquitous.
Tell us the reality. Tell us the reality here.
Yeah, so the reality is, SCORM has been around, you know, since, you know, so basically, you know, 25, 26 years at this point. So it has been around for a long time. It's a standard, but standards can be interpreted. So what we have seen out in the wild over the last 25 years are interpretations of the standard. So not every SCORM course plays the same in every single LMS, and not every LMS supports all of the components of some versions of SCORM. So we've got SCORM 1.2, pretty straightforward implementation. That's the most common that we see. Even today, you know, about 80% of the courses that we're seeing flowing through the systems we support are SCORM 1.2 packages. So pretty common standard for out there. So that's sort of, you know, our common denominator. SCORM 2004 starts to introduce more complexity. And that includes sequencing and navigation and branching and all sorts of other details that I won't bore you with. But as you add that complexity, the behaviors will change across these systems because not every system is going to handle all of those complexities identically the same. So when we look at this and, you know, zooming out for a minute, we have seen for sure courses that play and behave one way in one LMS might behave very differently in another LMS, whether it's how they roll up on their reporting or how they bookmark and save progress, you know, what happens at runtime, another fun little, you know, SCORM detail, all of those things come together. So it actually, it's not just a simple plug and play. There's put it in the new system, test it. Let's make sure it's behaving exactly the same. Fix it if you can, or, you know, just solving that problem. So that's a very long-winded way of for me saying to you, yes, it's a standard, but we do see wildly different behaviors out in the world.
Mm-hmm. So what if I developed everything in, I don't know, one of these standards, XAPI, and I have to distribute it to 30 customers that have an LMS that doesn't have XAPI? What happens in that scenario?
Yeah, so you're hitting on something that, you know, that comes up quite a lot. You mentioned XAPI, which was brought up, you know, introduced in 2013 as a newer way to manage and to deliver and track training, or actually just track training. So we start to see additional flavors of standards showing up as we move into more modern times. So it's not uncommon for a customer to have courses in a variety of standards. We always tell you, use the standard that's right for the job to be done. If you need a lot of tracking and a lot of fidelity in the data that you're collecting, XAPI, perfect use case. I won't get into all of the nitty gritty there, but I do want people to understand that you likely should be or will be using multiple standards. And if I'm a content creator, a content publisher or training company, we see this often where they're likely using more modern standards because they're investing so heavily in the content experience. And they want to make sure that they're delivering the right learner experience and capturing the right amount of data related to whatever their training and content needs. So we'll see them maybe going farther ahead when it comes to XAPI or even CMI5 adoption. But the reality comes back to, what do their customers have? What system do their customers have? And if your customer only has a 1.2, a SCORM 1.2 LMS, what do you do? Does the content sacrifice? Do you republish your content and a standard that's not robust enough for what you really need? Or are there ways to solve that compatibility problem? So we've worked with our customers on both sides to say, hey, let's make it possible for you to build the courseware in the way that you want and make it accessible to your customer's LMS and the standard they understand. So almost like a little bit of a translator, if you will, so you can take an XAPI course, CMI5 file, and create SCORM 1.2 versions of it that are simply just pointer files. All it's doing is just bridging the gap between, I have a course that looks like this and behaves like this, but I need people to get access to it. And it's that universal adapter of making that possible.
Wow. Cool. Well, you mentioned earlier about the once you recognize the admin tax, you start converting to this idea of the supply chain of content. That is a really good metaphor. We're almost out of time. You got any examples of an organization doing that, or what that might look like in real life?
Yeah. So the first time I sort of heard the supply chain analogy brought to L&D operations was I was presenting with one of our customers, LKQ, who also happens to be, large multinational organization, and a lot of their learners, their frontline employees that they train, are in warehouses. So naturally for them, the supply chain of, I've got my content team is creating this courseware, and, you know, the LMS acts as almost like the delivery van, if you will. It's the delivery mechanism to get that course, that product, to the customer who is ultimately that employee. And so that idea of sort of supply chain, how to remove friction, how do we reduce all of the steps to make sure that the right course gets to the learner at the right amount of time, and kind of leveraging that operations and supply chain mindset, was really kind of an eye opener for me. one of the things they're doing, actually, just even bringing it closer to what some of the learning practices they have going on and thinking about warehouses specifically, they use QR codes to provide access to training. So their frontline employees are in the warehouse all day long. They don't have time to stop what they're doing, find a machine to fire up the LMS to get the training they need. So they create a QR codes that actually, on your forklift, for example. So how do you use this machine? Oh, here's the QR code, fire it up. Great. I'm getting the training I need in the flow of work. And we talked a little bit earlier about what happens when you update courses and making sure the right version gets to customers and learners at the right time. In their world, prior to, streamlining all of this and managing their content, in one location, every time they made a change to a course, it generated a new URL. So that link was, so they couldn't publish a QR code and keep that in sync with whatever the URL kept changing. So every time that course was updated, anytime they needed to push new information out there, they almost had to start all over again and add additional steps to the process. So they've streamlined everything now. So when you hit that QR code, you're getting the correct information, the most accurate, up-to-date. So the consequences there can be anything from operating a forklift. We've also seen another customer leveraging this in actually a healthcare environment. So it's a hospital customer that's using it for accessing the latest and greatest training on certain types of equipment and devices that you'll find in any sort of hospital setting. So, the consequences there are, let's make sure you got the right information. But that sort of supply chain of getting the right piece of information to the customer at the right time. I think about what I order on Amazon and how they figure out a way to get that thing to me in the period of time I get it. Same thing here. How do we get those courses to those learners where they need it, when they need it?
Yeah, no, I love it. I love the metaphor because it's not a metaphor. It's exactly what happens. This is already figured out supply chain. I mean, that is, the world's invested decades into figuring out how that works, but we haven't thought about learning like that. But there's an emerging category. It's something that I'm covering. We're focusing a lot of time at Talented Learning is just the learning operations category. And it really, learning operations, supply chain management of content, it's all part of the same thing that we're discovering here too, is that organizations are finding these operational challenges. AI is making those challenges worse and better at the same time. And so how do you operationalize the business of learning? And that's what Talented Learning is all about, just that operation and measuring of that business. But we're out of time. We're probably over time. So here's the final advice question. How should an organization go about calculating what their admin tax is they're paying right now? And what point is too much?
Ah, yes. Quick little test maybe is to follow the process and look at, I've got to update let's just call it a compliance course. Figure out how many times a year do you update that course? Have someone just track the steps. And whoever has to manage this will probably happily tell you how many, not happily, but they're happier asking to understand how many steps are required. How much time does it take really? And just being intentional and solving, picking one course and follow it from start to finish. And that means what happens when we have a change? What are all of the effects, including making sure that learners got the right, the up-to-date version and the reporting on the back end. And so anytime you're watching these multiple step processes, whether it's, five steps to just get to the assignment page in the LMS to reassign a course, to the five CSV files I had to download. And then maybe I have an AI tool now that helps make that better, but I'm still munging together a lot of things just to get the right answer. So, quick test here is just walk through the process, have somebody document it for you and really understand. And then you do the multiplier, right? Then you kind of understand and look broadly to say, what is this at scale? And how do we solve that problem? You want to make sure your people are spending their time, that their valuable time and their brains on strategic things. And when you start to see these admin tasks building up, that's a place where, hey, let's try to find a way to remove that friction in that process so that we can put these people on bigger, more strategic problems to solve.
That's really sage practical advice. You can pay to solve the problem, in my opinion, by looking at the admin savings and enhancements and all the steps in there. You can quantify it, like just like you said, and that's usually enough to solve the problem from a process and from a technology standpoint. But the other side of that's harder or more difficult to measure is what that slowness, those extra steps, that lack of experience impacts on your actual business, on what the behaviors are trying to change. And that has a tax too. That's more difficult to get at, but the combination of those two make it something that you have to consider right now in 2026. This is no longer something you can avoid or hope that you can clean your library up on your next LMS migration in a couple of years. We didn't even talk about it yet, but what about putting an AI in front of all this content, and that content is wrong? And that's serving up wrong content. So all of these forces are coming together that makes a conversation like this all the more valuable. And for those of you listeners out there that are learning technology nerds, but not yet content nerds, it's time to join the team. Tammy.
We could talk about this for hours. You've just said so many things that I would love to unpack further, but yes, we'll
We'll bring you back. We'll bring you back.
Excellent.
All right. Well, it was great having you on the show, Tammy. Thanks for stopping by and sharing your knowledge. It's unparalleled. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. John, thanks. Thanks to you.
Awesome. Listeners, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Talent Learning Show podcast series. It was a good one and it's practical. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you on the next and have a great day. You can find more information about Rustici at rusticisoftware.com. And of course, you can find more of our fiercely independent analysis at talentedlearning.com. Have a great day. See you soon.